check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.
Are American politics and the economy beyond repair? The 2019 study Lethal Mass Partisanship found just over 42% of people in each party view the opposition as, quote, downright evil. Of course, it doesn't help that the balance of power in Washington seems to shift each election, creating deadlock and exposing socioeconomic inequalities. That was glaringly obvious even before the pandemic and Capitol riot. Or was it? Kevin Howard's an economic analyst, an Army veteran, and the author of Onward at Last. He told me in order to heal politically and move forward, we have to look back more than 50 years.
Do you recall the Reagan Democrats?
I do.
Okay, so these were working class, essentially working class white people, right, who had traditionally been in the Democratic Party because up through the Reagan revolution, right, the Democratic Party was identified as the party of labor, the party of the working person. Okay. And President Reagan was able to create a new governing coalition by bringing the Reagan Democrats into the Republican fold. Okay. All right. The people at the heart of the people who were in that protest are today's Reagan Democrats, which is working class, primarily white, who have gone from leaving the Democratic Party to return to go to the Republican Party, to going into the Tea Party, right, to going into MAGA and supporting Trump, right? And the reason why they keep on moving and can't find a home is because as their economic lives become progressively harder, they're told one story or another by their elected officials as to how what the problem is and how it can be fixed. And yet it only gets worse. Nothing changes, it only gets worse. And so by the time 2016 got here, right, the Republican electorate absolutely, during the primary season, rejected every establishment Republican, whether they were a legitimate, talented establishment Republican like John Kasich, governor of Ohio, or, you know, just any of the new, you know, Meg Whitman and all these other new people, business people, yeah, who are coming in. They rejected all of them in lieu of the most anti-establishment politician candidate they could find, which was Donald Trump. And the thing is, the Democratic electorate tried to do the same. They tried to do the same in 2016, and they tried to do the same again in 2020. The only difference between these two political parties is that on the Democratic side, the Democratic Party chose to be much more invasive in selecting their nominee. And so in 2016, what they did is, you know, as the Democratic electorate in the primary season was pushing towards Bernie Sanders, you know, that's what ultimately happened, right? What the Democrats did to tee up Hillary Clinton was essentially cut a deal with the Clinton campaign that all superdelegates who pledged their support to Hillary, right, would be able to participate in a pool of campaign funds raised by the presidential campaign in the general election, right? And so what happened is, before there was ever a vote on the Democratic side in 2016, 95% of all superdelegates committed to Hillary Clinton. And they stuck with her throughout the whole process. So this is how the party influenced, tipped the scales towards Hillary over and above the objection of their own party. But back to the Capitol protesters. So their anger is not simply tied to what is currently the narrative, which is that, oh, the election was stolen. It is a combination of the fact that Trump was their massive protest vote to the establishment, absolute rejection of the establishment, right? And, you know, and absolute disgust with the fact that the result of the election was to return the ultimate establishment politician to the White House. You know, so therefore, from their point of view, nothing really will change. You know, and they're done. They're at the point where they've exhausted every type of peaceful means. And now all that's left ultimately is revolution. protests, violence, right? And I am no apologist for them. But if we don't understand what encourages Americans to for the first time in U.S. history, to actually riot at the Capitol, then we miss the lesson here.
We are going to have to break through. I don't even want to say the aisle. We've got to break through between what is real and what is not at this point. How do you do it?
Well, the first thing that I would ask everyone to do is ask yourself, who benefits from this fight? Who benefits from red versus blue America, right? Because if you look at the rank and file of the conservative electorate, and you look at the rank and file of the progressive slash liberal electorate, working class, middle class, working poor, right? Both sides are under severe economic duress. Yeah. And while we blame each other, and while we hate each other and put all our energy in vilifying each other, the cause of our economic distress goes unabated. Right. So we just need to ask who is benefiting from the food fight. And I think if you look at the economics behind what's happened since COVID-19, it becomes really obvious. I mean, it's even more exaggerated. Right. So coming into COVID-19 last March, right, we had, okay, the state of the American economy is this. There were studies done by Harvard University and by the Federal Reserve, you know, on the current state of the economy, which they do on an ongoing basis. And basically where the economy was coming into COVID was we had morphed into a 60-40 economy. 60% haves, 40% have-nots. And what defined the have-nots were 40% of American households who were living paycheck to paycheck without the capacity to pay a $400 unexpected bill.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the state of the working poor and working class in America, right? 40% of the U.S. population. Right? Yeah. Okay. So that's coming into COVID. And then our necessary response to COVID, it's a pandemic. You're trying to limit the spread. It required us to shelter in place for a period of time. It requires us to socially distant, right? This, the need to do that has economically displaced, right, tens of millions of Americans from the productive economy. Because the people who live paycheck to paycheck, they can't shelter in place unless you replace their income. Because if they don't work, they don't eat. I mean, they don't have sick time. They don't have vacation time. They don't have savings. Okay. All right. And okay. And so what has happened in the 8 months or so, 9 months of COVID-19 is that the economic subsidies that our political leaders have provided, the economic stimulus, if you actually, I did an analysis of it and I put it in a commentary on my blog, Universal Oneness blog, called 2021, the year of the economy, right? And basically, in essence, 75% of the economic stimulus went to corporations of 500 employees or more. And 25% went to individuals and small businesses. So but because we came into this 60-40 with a huge portion of our economy, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, and then we got an economic body blow, and our government supported the large corporations and basically have been, you know, under-supported everyone else. And so what's the net effect? Today, small businesses in operation are down 29%. No, let that sleep in. 29% of all small businesses in the United States have failed since this time last year. And on the employment side, for the working class, jobs where the average, where the annual salary is $27,000 a year or less, their employment is down 20%. Wow. For people who make $60,000 a year or more, they're back to pre-COVID economy. They're doing great. right? So once again, in the working class, we have a net loss of 10 million jobs. And for small business owners who have capital, 30% of them have gone out of business. So we have tens of millions of Americans who have been economically displaced, right? And this is what's fueling the, you know, the absolute contempt and lack of trust with establishment politicians. And Joe Biden doesn't promise any, in fact, his promise, you know, was things will restore to the Obama years. Yeah. Which is just a continuation of what got the working class in this spot now.
I know you said take a step back and realize the world you're living in, but redefining our beliefs, that sounds easier said than done when you have the same politicians in office telling you what policies you think you deserve, what policies you think are fair. So how do you redefine your beliefs when you're constantly bombarded with it from both parties?
Well, see, this is the whole thing. The most from the individual perspective, most of these factors that we've discussed, these macroeconomic factors, right? Mm-hmm. They can't control. So what can you control, right? And what we can control as individuals is we can reclaim our power. By absolutely taking a sober look in the mirror and deciding, how am I contributing to the toxic society that is destroying my life? Okay. Mm-hmm. And how you do that, and this is what I'm saying about stepping back, right? Stepping back for a moment is let's go back to basics. Let's go, you know, we go through our daily lives and we don't think about how we are actually functioning. So, On What It Lasts is asking you to think about one question. How is it that we survive every day? Right. If you understand the wisdom, think about the wisdom of how you survive every day, the answer of where you need to go and what you need to do starts to appear. So go through a series of questions. How many people are involved in producing the food that you're going to eat today? How many people are involved in producing the clothes that you're going to wear today, the home that protects you from the elements, the car that you drive to work, and on and on and on. If you go through the process, you start to realize that for you to have a good day in your life, and this is the most pragmatic truth, for each of us to have a good day, it requires hundreds of thousands of people, most of which we will never know, to do what they do, to produce what they produce for our mutual benefit. And the moment any of those people have a bad day, and so therefore they don't produce what they produce as well as they can produce it, it affects us. This is the moment when you realize, oh my God, I need to stop the car and the brakes are not working because the mechanic didn't put the brake pads in right. Well, if the mechanic is worrying about how they're going to keep their lights on, the quality of their work gets affected. And this is how we affect each other. So what's the net effect? None of us survive independently. So if your aspiration is to be independent, right, when you actually survive every day based on the contributions of all of us, right, you are chasing your tail. You're not going to find fulfillment in that environment. And that allows you to put on a MAGA hat and hate the libtards. That allows you to be a progressive and hate MAGA. When at the same time that you are throwing that hatred, those people are amongst the many people who serve you every day, right? We are interconnected here. Yeah. And therefore, we have to start our values, how we organize our lives, how we answer questions on policy has to be beyond what is good for me and my family. Because guess what? Almost none of us could survive long.
Author and economic analyst Kevin Howard joining me on the Matt Ray Pod. You can find out more at theuniversalonenessblog.com. And Kevin's book, Onward at Last, is available on Amazon.